"I'm sorry" are the two most powerful words in the English language. When these words are part of a heartfelt apology, they are the greatest gift that we can give to the hurt party, to the relationship, and, of course, to ourselves. Yet the complicated dance between the offender and the offended often goes badly. Dr. Harriet Lerner's new book, Why Won't You Apologize? Healing Big Betrayals and Everyday Hurts, shows us how much the apology matters and why we so often screw it up. Again, the name of the book is Why Won't You Apologize? And we welcome Harriet Lerner to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
I'm delighted to be here.
Very nice to have you on the program. What brought you to want to look at this idea of the importance of the apology?
Well, we're all imperfect human beings. We all unwittingly hurt others just as we're hurt by them. So the need to give and receive apologies is actually with us till our very last breath. And when done correctly, the good apology is very healing. But when it's absent or it's a bad apology, it just deepens the original injury. So I have been studying this for quite a while. To be honest, what actually got me to hit the computer is I received a really sleazy, blame-reversing apology that was just hard to shake off. And, you know, it's funny what motivates an author to sit down and write when you've actually been investigating something for a long time, but that did it.
And as you point out, I mean, that's sort of universal in all of us, right? We all have these moments where we have that question of what we should do and what we should take account for and what we should perhaps not.
And it's very easy to muck up an apology. For example, we can add the word but. I'm sorry that I yelled at you, but you provoked me. I'm sorry that I forgot your birthday, but I was just snowed under with work. The word but always indicates a rationalization or an excuse. And it doesn't matter if what you say after the but is true. The but makes the apology false. So, you know, a very simple rule, I have to say there are at least 9 other ways to ruin an apology, but one simple rule is get your but out of your apology.
And that sometimes can be hard because that's the thing that we often hold on to as the qualifier and in some ways, depending on the depth of the situation, a way of maintaining some dignity.
Well, it may feel like a way of maintaining dignity, but in fact, our self-respect and our dignity and integrity and level of maturity actually rest on our ability to see ourselves objectively and to take a clear-eyed look at the way that our behavior affects others and to assume unequivocal responsibility for acting at another person's expense. However, we are wired for defensiveness, so it's not easy for humans to do this.
What, and you write about this in the book, what drives the non-apologizer? What is the rationale?
Sometimes non-apologizers don't apologize in a particular relationship or a particular context. For example, in marriage, people who feel very criticized in general feel there are too many criticisms and little corrections rather than an atmosphere of love and respect, it becomes very hard to apologize, even when you know that you should. However, some people are really entrenched non-apologizers. And no matter how well you approach them, no matter how gracefully you open a conversation where you're trying to reach them and get through, they will not get it. And the more serious the harm, the less likely that the apology that you need and deserve will ever be forthcoming.
Let's talk about the depth of the apology, because we can apologize and it doesn't always work, does it, for us or for the other party. So how do we craft an apology that can be successful on both fronts?
Some apologies are very easy to make. Like if you spill red wine on your friend's carpet, you know, you're just going to say from the heart, "I am so sorry," you know, and offer to pay the cleaning bill if there is one. But a lot of the hurts that we inflict are not simple. And "I'm sorry" isn't enough to heal the injury, because when someone is really hurt, it's not the words "I'm sorry" that they really want to hear. They want the wrongdoer to really get it. You know, that they want the wrongdoer to be able to say, "I get it. Your feelings make sense. I was wrong. And you can be assured that I'm not going to do that again." And to give an apology like that, you need to be able to really listen to the hurt party's anger and pain, which is the real difficulty. Because no apology has meaning if we don't listen carefully to the hurt party's anger and pain.
When you listen to that, I mean, obviously, it's more than just the apology. We hope in a perfect world to learn from it as well, don't we?
Right, of course. I mean, because apologies are not just words, one also performs an apology. So obviously you can apologize with a great flourish, but then if you repeat the very behavior that you're apologizing for, it doesn't have any meaning. And by the way, learning to really listen, which is the most important part of an apology, to really listen to the anger and pain of the hurt party when we don't quite agree with it and they're not seeing their part. Listening is not a very sexy subject. And people are much more motivated to improve their talking skills than they are to set aside their defensiveness and really listen with an open heart. So, you know, the fact is we are all wired to be much more motivated to improve our talking skills than to improve our listening skills.
You make this point in the book, but looking at it as a question of why people who do the worst things are often the least able to take responsibility and feel remorse. What does that say about them as people? And also about our overall relationships with them.
This is a very important subject, because sometimes the people who do the worst things are the very people that we have relied on to trust and protect us, whether it's a parent or an ex-spouse. And often we want to open up a conversation with that person and we want them to really get it. And the reason that people who have done the greatest harm to us will not get it is because of this. In order to apologize for a real harm, a person has to have a big, solid platform of self-worth to stand on. And from that higher vantage point, they can look out at their mistakes and they can see their mistakes as part of a much bigger picture of what it means to be human. However, people who do serious harm stand on a small, rickety platform of self-worth. And they're unable to get it. They are simply unable to own what they've done because it threatens them to collapse into shame, to collapse into an identity of worthlessness. And what I would like people to take away from that is, especially if you're going to open up a conversation with, say, a parent or someone really important, is that that person's ability to apologize has nothing to do with how much they love you or whether they love you. It has to do with how much self-worth that person has to draw upon. And we can't give that. You know, we can't give anyone else self-worth. So if you do want to speak to someone who has really harmed you, speak because you need to hear the sound of your own voice saying the truth about what you really believe. The apology that you need and deserve probably will not be forthcoming, not now or not ever.
The name of the book, Why Won't You Apologize? Healing Big Betrayals and Everyday Hurts. Harriet Lerner, I thank you very much for joining us this morning. A great pleasure.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much. Again, the name of the book, Why Won't You Apologize? The book is published by Touchstone. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.